you get any feedback, just please let me know. That's okay. That's one of the most annoying things. So.
No worries. I will definitely let you know.
Okay. So we're running. Where are you at right now? You're in L.A.?
I'm in L.A. That's where I live with my kids and my two crazy dogs.
Your two crazy dogs. What did you have planned today? I mean, obviously the phoner was a little bit delayed because of the you had to jump into Glee.
Yeah, I'm consulting this year, so I'm there helping out, and every once in a while they actually expect me to do stuff. It's weird.
It's kind of crazy in this industry how they like to pull you out of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Hey, you know, you're kind of signed up for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anything else planned for today, or is it just kind of relaxing?
It's funny, because I was joking with a friend. I remember reading somewhere that, you know, Diablo Cody's like, yeah, when, you know, we all, you know, one of my friends or I have a movie come out, we rent a limousine and go from theater to theater, and I was just like, oh, you know, I can't, you know, I think I'm just going to stay home and, you know, watch Real Housewives and, you know, eat junk food. It's too nerve-wracking.
So you're not all about the kind of going out and seeing it, you know, seeing how the... I mean, obviously, this interview's for Fright Night, so...
Right.
You're not going to go out and go screen it with everybody else?
I don't know. I'm still really on the fence. I'm really excited. I'd love to see it with an audience, but I was really fortunate that I got to see it with a lot of test audiences.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had a pretty unvarnished, you know, experience of watching it with a bunch of people who haven't seen it before. And like I said, if I went and there were only like seven people there, I'd really be bummed out. And, you know, right now the reviews have been really, really, really positive, and, you know, people really like it. So that's a really good feeling. So I guess I'm just not looking for a buzzkill.
Yeah, the wrong audience can kind of kill that, I guess.
And it can happen, you know. You can, you know, they can turn on you.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I kind of discussed with a lot of my friends after seeing the film, you know, I saw it I think I saw it on Tuesday actually. At the end of the day, for most of these films, you know, we're not going in expecting a lot of great dialogue or a lot of great plot points or things like that. With this film, it does kind of give you that, but it's also fun, and that's one of the big key things for a lot of these films is sometimes they're not even fun, and
right.
And that's where, you know, if you get a handle on a property like this and you can't even have fun,
right.
You know, that's a huge kind of disappointment. So, you know, obviously, okay, so you're done writing on this film. You said that you're kind of wary of going out and seeing it again with another audience, and you know, I can understand that. But are you going to keep tabs on the film? Are you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, we will all be watching the grosses with, you know, it's funny because I don't generally read reviews, and I really haven't. Except for one, somebody sent me one and said, you can read this and you should send it to your mom. but I try to sort of stay off, you know, but I'd be lying if I said I wasn't, you know, checking in with the studio pretty frequently, you know, about how our tomato rating is going, and, you know, and one of the executives who I love, who I've worked with on a bunch of projects now, is, you know, has been like, refreshing every 5 minutes, you know.
I know how that goes, because sometimes I like to check out ratings, you know, on Friday mornings and see them kind of rapidly update and see where that tomato meter goes.
Right, is it going to go up or down?
Yeah.
Really, it's anybody's guess, but you know. And so until we were up around 50 reviews, we were really nervous, you know, because it can plummet, you know, when the top critics weigh in. But we're pretty fresh, so you know that. And then in terms of the performance, I mean, it's a really tough market out there, so, you know, anything can happen.
Absolutely. You mentioned the screening process, that you've screened it a lot. Directors are kind of cold or hot on it. There doesn't seem to be a lot of middle ground for the advanced screenings and,
that's
you know,
funny, yeah.
The test screenings. But, you know, they can actually make changes a lot of the times. They're working on different edits, they're working on different, you know, shots and things like that. Whereas for a writer, that's like 95% of your material is up on the screen, and there's no recourse a lot of the time.
Right.
Yet you still enjoy it?
You know, enjoy would be generous. What I do appreciate is that you can definitely, I think you can't always tell what's not working, because audiences sometimes, you know, they'll have a reaction to a scene, for instance, saying like that scene is boring because they just talk, or you know, that scene isn't interesting because, you know, and you can't always rely on that, because sometimes they don't understand the kind of totality of the experience. If you don't have that scene there, even though you feel like you're momentarily bored, you really aren't going to feel as much at the end when that guy dies, you know?
Or, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, you can't always listen to group consensus on stuff like that. But you can really feel what is working. I mean, you can feel when something is funny because it'll land, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It'll land with enough people that you get a sense of that. Like, not everybody laughs at the same thing, but there's a consensus in laughter, and there's a consensus in fear. And, you know, we definitely tightened the movie, and we went through a lot of different versions. And ultimately, you know, it's interesting. We probably ended up closer to the first cut than far away from it, but we tested a lot of different possibilities before we got back to, you know, back to the basics.
Okay. You know, one thing I really love about the original and this film is that Jerry the vampire, he kind of plays with his food a little bit. He's kind of having fun. I mean,
yeah.
he is bored with it, but he is bored with it. He's not exactly always terrorizing, you know, 100%.
Right.
And as the film goes along, he hits a switch, and all of a sudden, he just becomes a monster. He doesn't care anymore. He's all about getting Charlie.
Yeah.
Was it difficult to kind of keep that balance and keep him reined in, or?
No, I mean, that again, that's something that's really fun about the original movie. Like, he doesn't want to kill the next door neighbor kid. That's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit too risky, a little
mm-hmm.
bit too close to home, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, he tries to kind of just warn the kid off. But once he realizes that kid's not going away, you know, yeah, he becomes a nightmare.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that was kind of some of what we had fun with the new version, is we just went for that. You know, like, once the chase is on, there's no downtime for coffee and a chat. You know? they're, you know, it's pretty much solid action from then on.
Absolutely. When we first see the suburb that they're staying in, and you shot it in New Mexico?
Yeah.
Yeah. This suburb, I remember when I saw it, and, you know, they have the title credit, Fright Night, and it's all in 3D, and by the way, that looks awesome.
It looked great, I know. It's a good first, you know, little hit.
Exactly, yeah. But one of the things that kind of struck me was, I almost got chills looking at that neighborhood, thinking, you know, and you've mentioned this before, it's a great setting for these monsters to kind of come out and live, because, you know, it's very secluded. I looked at it, and, you know, I'm just like, there's a suburb in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
When you arrived on set, was that kind of the feeling, like, wow, this is perfect?
Yeah, I mean, I had that experience again and again, because Craig Gillespie and the whole team he assembled was just so strong. Like, the first time I went to the set and saw the Peter Vincent stuff, I just was like, it's so much better than, you know, I'd even imagined. But yeah, I mean, the idea of doing a horror thing in Vegas was really appealing to me. I was super excited about that, and I had come in with that, you know, pitching that as a part of this. And you know, it was a little nerve-wracking because I wasn't sure they were going to bite. So to speak.
Yeah.
And when they did, I was so thrilled, because I've been thinking for a while, like, where better to, you know, be a vampire?
Exactly.
Kind of, there's parts of this suburb that are sort of a ghost town because of the economic downturn and the mortgage crisis, and, you know, people sleep all day sometimes and party all night or work all night, and it's got this sort of transient population, and all of those elements made it to feel like, well, this is the best, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they really, you know, Craig totally got it. He really captured that sense of alienation and kind of isolation. But also it's a little nod to those Spielberg movies that I love so much. You know,
the Amblin?
Yeah, that kind of Amblin, you know, tract home suburb feel, which is, I actually wrote a little piece for CNN that's up right now, you know, just a little essay about why I found that so attractive.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. You mentioned that Craig Gillespie had you know, brought you onto set. I've got the sense from reading some other interviews with you that you were there for a large portion of the shoot. Is that true?
Actually, I wish I had been. I was there a little bit. I was there as we were getting into stuff for you know, for some of the early stuff. But I unfortunately have two little kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I couldn't be there as much as I'd like, but we definitely, there's a lot of communication about what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, as a screenwriter, and any kind of writer, a second set of eyes is kind of important. Sometimes it can, you know, really kind of help you hone in on material and things like that. Is there a go-to person for you that you bounce scripts off of?
I'm really good friends with another writer, a female writer named Lita Calagritis.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, she was one of the writers on Avatar. She wrote Shutter Island.
Okay, yeah.
She's, you know, another...
Didn't you do a Comic-Con panel with her?
Yeah, I've done a couple with her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, you know, she's a super awesome, you know, chick who's into writing strong, you know, female characters and is also... You know, unfortunately, there are not too many women who write genre.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think there's a lot of women who write it. There's a lot more now than there used to be.
Definitely.
Like Melissa Rosenberg and, you know, and Lita. And I think there's a whole new gen of young writers coming up who are, you know, totally fluent. But at least in, you know, for the women my age, there's not a ton of us. So we all know each other pretty well.
close-knit, yeah.
Yeah, we're a pretty close-knit little group. And I just, I love her feedback. She's super smart and sharp. So
cool.
We talk all the time about what we're doing. And we show each other our stuff. And
awesome. Okay, so this is just something that, you know, is kind of a burning question that I want to kind of get your reaction on. When I first saw David Tennant as Peter Vincent, there was an immediate double take, and come on, be honest, how much does he look like Michael Sheen from Underworld?
That's really funny. I never thought of that.
You never thought of that? For some reason it just completely blanked, and I kept on thinking, I didn't remember Michael Sheen was in this film. Like, I kept on thinking, wait, no, that's somebody else. And then, you know, there is this great moment where he kind of uncovers himself, and then it kind of shows through, you know, hey, this is David Tennant. But
right.
But in full Peter Vincent garb, I don't know, it was creepy how much he reminded me of Michael Sheen from Underworld.
That's really funny. I had never thought of that.
Yeah.
Good call.
So, Jerry, kind of getting back to the screenwriting process, Jerry has moments in the film where he kind of noticeably works himself up to be able to bare his fangs or, fully transform. Was that something that you, Gillespie, and Farrell kind of developed as a group, or was that in your script?
No, that was in the script.
Awesome.
I mean, but he really went and, I mean, like, there was a reference to the fact that he, that there was a scent that the first reference to it in the movie, he mentions that his mother gives off a scent.
Mm-hmm.
And then Colin, I think, really developed that idea. So it was in the script, but it wasn't nearly as developed as it became. I think he really grasped that and was like, "Oh, I'm gonna really go with that."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's certain moments in the film where it kind of really plays off, because you're kind of looking at him and you're saying, "Why isn't he, you know, fully developed yet?" Or, you know, and then you can tell that there's something he has to have happen before he can get to that point.
Well, it's also he just has to get, you know, I mean, I think he's treating it a little bit like, you know what, he has to get excited.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you know, he has to feel like there's a little challenge at least before he can, you know, go into that mode.
Right. He has to get himself worked up.
there's a great moment where Jerry kind of notices the shoes that Charlie is wearing. And it's in the first 20 minutes or so, and I don't want to go into too much detail, but you know, you've talked about how you did kind of fly on the wall research to kind of nail down the teenagers and get that sense. Was that something that came about because of that?
I mean, you know, I was aware. I have some, you know, I have some, like, some of the offices I've worked in, some of the writers' rooms, you know, some of the assistants are like super down with the whole tennis shoe thing. and I also live in a neighborhood where there are a bunch of really exclusive shops that sell, you know, I live in like the middle of Los Angeles where there's like these stores on La Brea where I'll see people lined up, and it took me a while to realize like they're lining up for a shoe.
Yeah.
a shoe thing. And so I did a little research, and I, you know, it's not like something I know about, but I mean, I know about lining up for shoes, but those are, you know, those are on sale.
Exactly. Yeah, you're not lining up to buy them full price.
Yeah. So, you know, I just thought it was a funny little, you know, shade. And I also thought it was funny because, you know, a lot of his stuff is about manhood, and he wears these awesome, you know, sneakers that are supposed to be worn by, like, professional basketball players, and, you know, but he doesn't really wear them for basketball.
Exactly. Yeah, that's always the joke is, you know, if you see somebody walking around with a $120 pair of basketball shoes and you ask them to go play basketball, they'll laugh at you. You know, it's like, I don't play basketball.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, what? Come on. But, you know, one thing that's kind of going around right now is the talk about 3D. And from what I can tell, this is your first project that implemented 3D.
Yeah.
So did you get a chance to kind of work in some set pieces for that, or did it kind of come about too late in the game for you to kind of, you know, tweak some scenes or things like that?
You know, we knew we were going to shoot in 3D. I think that Craig Gillespie, who, you know, is the director, who did such a great job. You know, I feel like his point of view about it was really more about wanting to make it feel like a more immersive experience, but he didn't want to overdo the 3D element.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't into doing a bunch of gags with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't really write to it. You know, honestly, I'm not a huge fan because I feel like it degrades the picture a lot.
And I will say this, in the first probably 60 minutes of the film, there's a lot of night scenes. And you know, look, you're wearing glasses and it's going to darken the image. And, you know, there's been a lot of debate about, you know, are theaters running it at the right luminosity to, you know,
right.
really, and, you know, unfortunately, it does kind of play out on this film, especially where there's so many dark scenes and your characters aren't exactly wearing bright, colorful, you know, clothing.
Yeah.
So they kind of, you know, it can get difficult to kind of keep track.
It just gets muddy.
It is, and
you know, they can film it. You know, however they like, and it was filmed beautifully. It's not a question of how it's filmed, but it is a question of how it's projected. And too often, you know, I feel like I'm underwater, so I'm not crazy about it. I like to see the, you know, if I have a choice, I like to watch them in regular old 2D.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Near Dark was brought up a lot in a lot of interviews, and it's funny because one of my press friends was just asking about seeing that film, and I actually just happened to have a Blu-ray for it, and I was like, yeah, I have this film, and then,
yeah.
You know, this interview is coming up, and so, but, you know, and I want to say, you know, that's a great, great little, you know, vampire flick for a lot of people that haven't jumped on that that bandwagon. But are there any kind of modern vampire films or even horror films, horror comedies, like maybe Drag Me to Hell, that you know, were a modern inspiration, not just, you know, things from the 80s or the 70s or things from even beyond that?
Well, it's pretty funny you would mention Drag Me to Hell, because I wrote a version of that movie.
Wow. Okay.
I wrote the draft before the draft they shot. The funny thing is they at that point wanted to go much more in the direction of comedy, almost like a romantic horror comedy.
Uh-huh.
So I did a draft that was much more sort of like chicky and chick driven.
Uh-huh.
You know, shockingly, they went back to the version that Ivan and Sam wrote. I can't blame them for that. But you know, I mean, Sam Raimi is a huge inspiration. It's just his ability to do the sustained horror slapstick, brilliant.
I don't know if you recall the film all that vividly, but there's a moment where she's being stalked by this demon, and she's climbing up the stairs, and she locks herself in the room, and there's a scene of a wall as soon as she closes the door, and there's this cat hanging from the post, from a poster,
and
it says "keep hanging on," and it's this super intense scene, and all of a sudden you see this image, and I remember it just hit so well in the theater when I was watching it.
Yeah. Well, he's just so. I mean, Evil Dead 2 is one of my favorite movies, hands down. You know.
Yeah.
And then I just thought Zombieland was inspired. I love Zombieland.
You know, it's disappointing because I will say this. I kept track of it as far as box office, and you know, when I first heard about it, I thought zombies, Woody Harrelson, and rated R, and I thought, wait, this is great. Like, this is exactly what I want. And it, you know, it did well for what it is. It is an R-rated, you know, horror comedy, but it didn't do as well as I was hoping it would do.
I think, you know, I mean, it's all about, like, what you shot it for. And I feel like, if you make the money, you know, make the movie for a price, I think that movie actually in Hollywood circles is considered a real success.
Absolutely. And you know, like I said,
but it wasn't as widely accepted as you'd hope given how good it was.
Exactly.
And how funny it was.
You know, and the cameo was, I don't
brilliant.
Know if you were paying attention all that much, but I mean, it was really kept under wraps so well, and in this age, you know,
that's true. They really did a good job. You're right.
That was kind of incredible.
Yeah, you're right. They did a pretty amazing job of keeping that a secret, because you know what a great, you know, what a great surprise it was. And I didn't know about it. I try not to read reviews for other people's movies, because I just like to go in fresh and form my own opinion. So I didn't read anything about it. Just a lot of people said, "Oh, you're gonna love it." And the same with District 9. It was just so many people were like, "Got to see this movie."
Yeah.
So I, you know, once I caught them, I still didn't know that much about them, which was so great. So yeah, when he showed up, I was just blown away. I was like, "What?"
Exactly.
He's actually in the movie.
Yeah. And you know,
I'm so sorry. Last question, please.
Oh, okay. That's all right. Let's see here. Let's get a good one in here then. Okay, you're going to be jumping into the zombie genre for Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Yeah.
And obviously you're going to be reteaming with Gillespie. How much are you, and I believe you're doing rewrites on the film?
Yeah, I did some rewriting on it. It's going to, you know, it's not cast yet, so we're not exactly sure, you know, when. But I worked on it a couple months ago, so I'm really excited. I hope it gets made. It's such a fun project.
Are you kind of hampered by what's already there, or did you get kind of free rein to go and? I mean, obviously the novel kind of took off and was on bestseller list for
a little
while.
Right. No, so, what a trip.
Yeah. So I mean, were you kind of having to to hone in on and stay along the lines of what was already there, or did you kind of get to play around with it?
You know, a little bit of both. There were certain areas in the movie where they were like, you know, this is something that we really, you know, where you really, I want you to go, you know, invent. And there were other places where, like, this is really working. You know, a lot of the script, it was written by David O. Russell, who's, you know, he's no slouch. and a lot of it was super delightful and funny. And so it was just about, you know, certain areas where stuff needed to be reimagined. And also about, you know, I think doing some work with the Elizabeth character, because, you know, I am a chick, and so is she. So I had, you know, had some stuff to bring to that a little bit.
Absolutely. Okay, well, you know, she did say a final question, so I will thank you for sitting down and, you know, taking time out of your busy day.
My pleasure. Thanks for talking to me.
All right. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello?
Marty?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, okay, so the last one is with Michelle McHugh from We Are Movie Geeks.
Okay.
One second. We Are Movie Geeks.